extensive program in the series offered in cooperation with the College of the City of New York called Our Stake in War, The Democratic Way of Life. This afternoon, your city station brings to its microphones a distinguished American educator, Dr. Henry Newman, leader of the Brooklyn Ethical Culture Society, who will be introduced by Professor Gustav F. Schultz, chairman of the Department of Public Speaking at City College. Professor Schultz.
In introducing this afternoon's talk, the college takes great pride in the fact that the speaker who will now address you is not only a graduate of the college, but was at one time a member of its teaching staff, and since those days has been president both of its alumni association and of its chapter of Phi Beta Kappa. There can be no question, however, that proud as we are of his association with the college, he is much more widely known as the leader of the Brooklyn Society for Ethical Culture and as the author of a series of splendid books, among which special reference may be made, perhaps, to Education for Moral Growth, Modern Youth and Marriage, Lives in the Making. Today, the topic is the particularly vital one, freedom of expression. It gives me great pleasure to present Dr. Henry Newman.
Thank you, Professor Schultz. To many persons, wartime would hardly seem to be the time to talk about freedom of expression. People say, how can a war be won with everybody as free to speak as in days of peace? Do you want to give the foe information he can use? A careless word may tell him what port some ship is leaving or where it's bound. He can put to use this foe. Any criticism we make of our public officials, whether in the army or in the civilian service. So why bring up at all at a time like this the matter of free speech? This is what many people hold. Well, we can begin by agreeing, of course, that military secrets should not get out. Nobody can expect our government to let us discuss its plans, let's say, for the next military move, how many men, how many planes are going to this place or that, or when. But other discussions are still very much in order. Nay, just because the ideals of democracy are now so immensely important, is all the more reason to look again at this priceless freedom we still enjoy even while at war and must continue to enjoy. Take, for example, the report of the Roberts Commission on Pearl Harbor. Here was an impartial fact-finding body appointed to get at the truth about December 7th and whatever was back of those failures. The facts were made public. And what a difference between America and Germany. In Germany, too, huge mistakes have been made and are very likely to go on being made. In spite of the reputation for superhuman wisdom the dictators want to build up, they, too, are human beings who can make the most serious blunders. But your dictator tries to keep people from learning about those mistakes. He can imprison, he can shoot whoever lets the least whisper cross his lips. In a democracy, the errors are made public. And the people themselves, meaning that is you and me, are thereupon stirred to redouble our efforts and make them wiser efforts. No system of life anywhere is proof against the blunders that we all can make, wouldn't you say? But when it comes to learning from those errors, when doing better as a result, how democracy towers miles above even the most efficient dictatorship. Nothing would please Hitler more than for America to be blind to where it's weak or wrong, or for our government to act as if this war were some private and confidential matter. Another example of the benefit that we all get from freedom to criticize is being shown today in Great Britain. Over there, the party opposed to the majority is called His Majesty's Loyal Opposition. Why, that very name tells how democracy, instead of suppressing a minority, uses that minority to promote the general good, just as my best friend may sometimes be the man who tells me where I am wrong. Look at this one instance. Here is Great Britain so mightily troubled over India. Mr. Churchill sends Sir Stafford Cripps to plead with Nehru and the other Indian leaders. And who is Cripps? A short while ago, he was a member of His Majesty's Loyal Opposition. He was openly critical of Mr. Churchill and his policies, especially with regard to Russia and India. And now Mr. Churchill takes him into his cabinet. It's almost as if, let us say, a conservative like President Hoover had taken into his cabinet Upton Sinclair or Norman Thomas. In Germany, any Sir Stafford Cripps would have been sent long ago to the concentration camp. What good to Germany could he possibly have done there? In Great Britain, instead of being silenced, he was allowed to speak the truth which he saw, and his very former opposition was made a means of serving his country. That's the way democracy acts, even in wartime. And that's why freedom of expression must continue. Our public officers, being human, make mistakes. They need the brains, they need the patriotism of those who disagree with them. It's to the interests of our country that they should have such criticism. A democracy governs through a majority, but a majority which welcomes aid from the very minorities in the opposition. I mention this, friends, because here's a fact which the worries of wartime can very easily make us forget. The danger is that when we get scared, the plea of safety, patriotism, will be urged to cover up healthy disagreement, or to silence, or even to mob the ones who speak it. Fortunately, there's much less terrorism today than there was in 1917. During the First World War, and the years immediately after, many disgraceful acts were committed. Without the least legality, five socialist assemblymen were driven out of the state legislature at Albany. Vigilance committees, often bands in the American Legion, broke up meetings, sometimes with the support of public officers who were supposed to stop such lawlessness. We shall need to be watchful that these disgraces do not happen again this time. We shall need to remind one another that even in wartime, debate and free criticism can be as essential to the triumph of democracy as they are in peace. Here's a senatorial committee headed by Senator Truman, for example, looking into the relations between the Standard Oil Company and the German Die Trust. Is it true that the oil company withheld valuable military information from our government while it gave this to the Nazis? I don't know. The chairman of the board of Standard Oil is a member of the War Labor Board. Is it, I ask, to the public interest, or is it not, that all the facts in the case, one way or another, be made public? Many of our newspapers seem very anxious to have this whole matter dropped. They tell us that this is the time for unity and confidence. Yet these very papers are stirring us up every day over what they call the danger to America from the better hours and the better wages enjoyed by the workers in the factories. If this is matter for public, free, frank discussion, is the other case any less so? And the same holds with regard to discussing the kind of peace we want to see established. When Mr. Churchill, for instance, declared that Germany was going to be disarmed, while the victors alone would be trusted with weapons, he was unintentionally helping the Nazis. Yes, I repeat that. It was actually helping the Nazis for him to say that Germany was going to be disarmed and the victors alone would be trusted with weapons. Why, the Nazi propaganda bureau was only too glad to quote Churchill to this effect and tell the Germans that a British victory was going to leave them wholly at the mercy of their foes, and that therefore Germans had everything to gain by continuing to fight. Don't you think it would have been better to announce peace aims which would convince the Germans and the rest of Europe that they had everything to gain from the defeat of the Nazis? This opinion of mine may be all wrong, but the point is that matters of this kind should be discussed openly, fully, widely from one end of America to another, even though public officials or prevailing community opinion may be all for keeping quiet. I recommend, for those of you that care for literature on the subject, the best book on this whole subject, the recently published revised edition of Freedom of Speech by Professor Zachariah Chafee of the Harvard University Law School. In this new edition, Professor Chafee reminds us how we forgot in 1917 and the years immediately after that it was wrong to silence such critics of the government as socialists or pacifists. The feeling then was that a man should be silenced when his remarks might be said to show a tendency to do harm. A very wise person in the Supreme Court, the late Mr. Justice Holmes, disagreed with that view. In his decisions, he trusted that in the long run, the democratic procedure would prove more healthy to America than the methods of the dictator. And so Justice Holmes ruled that men were to be silenced, not when their remarks might have a tendency to do harm at some future time, but only when a clear and present danger existed. Professor Chafee thinks that now we shall do more sensibly than we did in that earlier day, because we've been warned through men like Justice Holmes how far we went wrong in that other time. The limits and the scope of free speech are now defined more clearly. Above all, we have before us, in the example of Europe, the unmistakable harm that comes from suppressing minority opinion. Dictators and democracies, being the work of human beings, are both likely to mistake. Which is the better way, to shoot or imprison the ones who point out our mistakes, or to use those very criticisms to make the democracy all the stronger? A case very much to the fore just now is that of social justice. From what I saw of it, I think that this paper is a disgrace to our country, and that the man back of it is a dishonor to his sacred profession and to America. And yet, I wouldn't suppress even that paper unless the fact were unmistakably clear that it shows, in Judge Holmes' words, not a tendency to do harm, but a clear and present danger. Unless there is this clear and present danger, I wouldn't use the power of government to suppress the paper. I'd rather trust the better America to refute the lies, the prejudice, and the hate. Just this word in closing. I think it's mighty good that these radio talks are being given under the auspices of our own municipal college. The job of a college is, among other things, to help a new generation learn how to find out truth and how to put it into practice. Do we of the older generation really mean business when we say this? Well, one way to prove that we do mean business is to stand up sturdily for the basic democratic principle of free expression, even in times as anxious as these.
Thank you, Dr. Newman. Ladies and gentlemen, you just heard a discussion of freedom of speech by a distinguished American educator, Dr. Henry Newman, leader of the Brooklyn Ethical Culture Society, who was introduced by Professor Gustav F. Schultz, chairman of the Department of Public Speaking at City College. The program was one in a series presented by your city station in cooperation with the City College Civilian Defense Council to bring New Yorkers an authoritative analysis of the many phases of defense for democracy. Copies of these discussions, as well as copies of a very useful guide to civilian protection compiled by the City College staff, are yours for the asking. Write for yours to the Civilian Defense Council, City College, 280 Convent Avenue, New York City, enclosing 10 cents for each copy. This evening at 8 o'clock, we are to hear an important special program in the City College series, a program in which Jan Masaryk, Minister of Foreign Affairs for the Czechoslovak Republic, is to be our program guest.